Hello, and welcome to the Dangerous Creatives Podcast. If you're growing your photography or creative business, you're in the right place. Each week, we deliver a workshop-style solo show, expert interview, or motivating story from our community, so you can tune in to find encouragement, motivation, and ideas to help the right people find you and your amazing work. I'm your host, Kristen Sweeting. I'm a photographer and coach, and my favorite thing is helping dangerous creatives just like you stand out in a world that just wants us to blend in. I'm so glad you're here. Let's dive in. Well, hey, and welcome back to the Dangerous Creatives Podcast. Today, I'm so excited to have Brooke Schultz here with me, and we are going to talk about I say this every time. Everyone's so annoyed that I'm always like, I'm just so excited about this one. But we're talking about being a multi-passionate creative person, having lots of different things that we love doing. And there's no one better to talk about this than Brooke Schultz. So I'm excited that you're here today. And I would love for you to introduce yourself a little bit more to our podcast guests.
Thank you, Kristen. I'm super stoked to be here and really excited to be talking about this. So I am a multi-passionate creator. That's like what I define myself by. So I'm a family photographer. I do retreats and education for other photographers as well. But I also am writing a motherhood musical. I just started a magazine for family photographers. I love to paint. I have a podcast. I like to write. I mean, I'm just kind of the stereotypical person who just is all things creative, all things right brain. I love all of that. And so I love incorporating all of that into my offers and what I do in my business.
I love that. I love that. Was there ever a time before you kind of opened yourself up to doing all these different creative ventures where you kind of got, I don't know, I feel like I tend to overthink of like, I just need to pick this one thing. I just need to lean into this one area of doing something. Like, did you have a time like that, or were you always kind of open to a bunch of different things?
Yeah, as a kid, I was super creative in the sense that I would just be in my bedroom writing my own novels and like singing on the street. As a 10-year-old girl, I just thought that I was going to get discovered by someone listening to me as I was writing my writer on the streets of my suburban neighborhood. I don't know. But I always have had this very voracious appetite for all things creative. But when I was trying to choose a path, then that wasn't in my head that it was an option to choose multiple things. And so I started down the track actually of music education. That's what my degree is in. And I was doing student teaching. And then a coworker asked me to photograph her wedding. I just liked photography as a hobby. And so I'm showing her all these amazing photographers that I think she should hire for her wedding. She's like, how about you do it? How about $75? I'm like, great. Sounds awesome. So that was kind of how I got started into wedding photography. Luckily, that was not the end of the journey. And I very quickly raised prices and figured things out that way. But I was obsessed with wedding photography. And that is something that I find is a common thread in the multi-passionate creators that I talk to, is that we tend to be obsessed with one thing for a certain period of time. And then we sort of move on and we get obsessed with something else. But I was obsessed with wedding photography. So it was a very easy choice for me to get into wedding photography. And I didn't really have anything else that was calling to me at that point. And it wasn't until a lot further down the line in wedding photography and then switching to family photography that I realized that I wanted to actually incorporate all these other interests into what I was doing in my business.
Yeah. I didn't realize how similar our stories were. I was actually a music education major as well and was a musician as a kid and made all my own clothing and made jewelry. Like, I was so creative in all these different ways. And then I remember just people externally were like, you're such a good singer. You're a good singer. You're a good singer. It was like, do that, do that, do that. And then all of a sudden I was kind of pushed into this one path and also did the wedding photography. And it's been fun to open up to a bunch of things since then too.
Yeah. Well, and I think at that time, the time that we were growing up in that stage of the world, I don't think it was as possible and definitely not as easy to be a multi-passionate creator. Like, you making your own clothes and just being crafty and creative in that way, that was not a a known source of monetary income at that point. Now, with a social media, with just the current landscape of things, and we get, okay, this is how you monetize that kind of passion or that interest. But I think, you know, well-meaning people at that time just didn't have the vision to see what was possible for multi-passionate creators at that point.
Totally. Totally. So what was your first side hustle, so to speak? You were doing photography, and then you're like, I have these other things that I like. Maybe I try. What was the first one?
Well, I didn't really think of it in those terms at that time, but I was a wedding photographer and I wanted to try family photography. I found a photographer named Jenny Jay. I found her family photography work, and it was unlike anything that I'd ever seen. It was documentary. It was storytelling. It was really emotive. And all I knew of family photography was just like smiling at the camera in the fall leaves type of cheesy stuff. And so when I found her work, I was like, I have to try this. And so my first iteration was just to offer, I think it was like, well, actually I photographed five families. I put out a model call that I wanted to photograph five families in their homes. I did it for free. And then after that, I started just falling in love with family photography. And it was the progression of switching, in my view, it was switching from wedding photography to family photography. And I used actually weddings to sort of fund my family work for a long time. I was not charging sustainable prices for my family photography. And I was using the money that I was making from weddings to fund families. And I think that's a pretty I definitely don't recommend that. And I think that was a reflection of my limiting beliefs, that I didn't believe that people would pay for family photography, which is absolutely not true. And I'm so grateful that I don't subscribe to that belief anymore. But that was sort of my first side hustle in that sense.
That makes sense. You said you don't necessarily recommend that way of doing it anymore. What would you go back and tell yourself at that time? Or what do you advise people to do now if they're kind of sneaking into that next thing?
Yeah, I would say, there are some things about it that I did right, in the sense that I wasn't just falling in love with family photography and immediately saying, I'm this now, it's over, wedding photography, peace out, bye. I shot those first sessions in that style that I was interested in 2012, I believe. And it was like the end of 2012. And I didn't fully say goodbye to weddings until 2014. And part of that was that I wasn't ready. I didn't feel the need to fully jump ship. But the example of like wedding photography and family photography, I think makes a lot of sense to people. It's not very disparate. But if you have an interest in something that is a far departure from what you're currently doing, what I suggest is a 30-day project and approaching things with a project mentality. Of course, this can be a different scope depending on what the thing is that you want to try. But really getting into that parameter and something that has a start and end point and has a clear objective is the medicine that you need when you're a multi-passionate, bright, shiny object syndrome, like I love everything, I'm obsessed with ideas, I have way too many of them type of person. So that's what I suggest, like just to get started. If you're like, I love all these things, I want to be, you know, 7 different titles, I want all of them, then start with a 30-day project. Pick one thing. Do it for 30 days. And of course, it doesn't mean you have to do the same thing for 30 days. Like you're going to figure out the scope of what you want to accomplish in that short time frame. But the point of that is to give you enough data to know what your next move should be, to know what you want to do next, to know if you want to continue on with this thing, or you want to say that was really fun and that was great, and now I'm moving on to something else.
I love that you talk about that. I was just listening to that episode on your podcast, the Wildly Creative Life podcast, which is amazing. Y'all should check out her podcast as well. But where you're talking about resilience versus grit, and I thought that was such an interesting conversation to have of, we don't always have to push for years for something to work. Like there's options, there's ways to test things. And I think we tend to like get this idea and like, attach so much of our own value to whether that idea works out or not.
There it is.
How many of your ideas have you tested and maybe have not worked, or have like you've changed direction? I think like it helps to hear those things because I have so many. I've tested so many things that have not worked. And I think like a lot of times we only see the end product. We see all these things that look like they're going super well and we don't see people's journeys. So what does that look like for you? How does that testing process look for you? And were there any that you were like, I had this great idea and I tested it, and then I kind of was like, no, that didn't work. That's okay.
Yeah. This is the creative life. This is the creative journey, is testing stuff that doesn't work. I think the difference is that I tend to feel like when something doesn't work, I'm going to iterate and do it again a different way. So I've had many failed launches where I've done like a 5-day challenge where I was, you know, on calls every day for 5 days, like sharing a bunch of what I thought was super valuable content, put out the offer at the end, nobody buys, one person buys, that type of thing. I've been on webinars with like 2 people in attendance. I've done, you know, photo shoots where my camera was broken the entire time. I mean, this is what it is. Like, this is what you're signing up for when you sign up for a creative life. But I think the reframe that works for me is that I don't view any of those as failed ideas, and failed launches or things that didn't work out. I view it as just, it's data, it's information. I'm going to do it again in a different way. So, like my podcast, for example, for a long time, I didn't have any offers connected to my podcast. It was just like sweet free content, no ads, no offers, no nothing. And that didn't, like, in that sense, that didn't work because it burnt me out, and it wasn't sustainable for that reason. So I hope that feels like an answer to the question and not a deflection. But I think that the best news about all of that is that every risk is rewarded. Every piece in the journey is a necessary stepping stone. If you never have those failures, those things that suck, those ideas that flop, then you, number one, you're probably playing way too small. And number two, you don't have this, you don't get this juice, this sense of aliveness, this feeling of twirling into the unknown. Like, why do we love, you know, all the songs from Frozen 1 and Frozen 2? It's like, let it go into the unknown, because we love that feeling. Like, as much as we're afraid, as much as we're scared of, you know, failing or scared of ideas falling and not working, we actually get way more juiced by going into the unknown, by doing something that we've never done before, than this rinse and repeat, boring, like work, eat, sleep thing that so many people have. Like, the thing that makes me so angry is when creators box themselves into a business that's like a 9-to-5, that's like a corporate job, and you're being just a bad boss to yourself. Like, we can play, we can have fun. And that's, and of course, part of the fun is those losing times. Like, you would never want to play a game in which you knew you were always going to win 100% of the time. That video game is boring. It's not fun at all. Part of the fun is that risk, is that possibility that things are not going to go well.
Totally. Totally. I feel like it's like learning how to solve problems on the fly is also part of the creative process for me too. I'm like, okay, that one thing didn't work so well. Like, let's figure out how to solve that problem, or like what puzzle piece was missing. And that's definitely, you know, letting go of that, this has to achieve this, has opened up a lot more fun energy in my business as well.
And it's all about that non-attachment. When you're just playing, when you're not attached to the outcome, the ironic thing is that's when everything comes together. That's when everything comes to fruition. And that's the most fun. That's the most fun.
Yeah. I love how much you talk about alignment, and I feel really strongly about that too, of, you know, making aligned choices. But I feel like it can be much harder to know like what that is if you're just getting into learning how to listen to your inner voice, learning how to trust yourself, And I know for me, it was like years of a journey of learning how to follow those pings. What are some things that have helped you as you've like tried to make aligned choices and move through, move through your business in this different way, which is this more kind of like creative, flowy way? What have some things been that have helped you as you figured that out?
Well, it's hilarious that I could talk about having figured it out because that's never a thing for me.
Yeah.
And we think that we can find alignment by thinking our way there. Like if I just plan and, perfect things behind the scenes, I'm going to release this beautiful creation that everyone's going to love. Everyone's going to buy. You know, I think of that scene in La La Land where it's like at the end where it's just applause, it's perfection. It's, you know, everything goes right. And we think that we can just think our way there. And that's never the case. It's always through action. It's always through trying stuff. It's always through that twisty, windy roller coaster. I think a lot of people think of a career or a creative journey as an upward only trajectory. And if you're not steadily climbing, steadily improving, every piece of creation is better than the last, then somehow you're doing it wrong. You're not aligned, or there's something wrong with you, and nothing could be further than the truth. It's just a roller coaster. And we know this about life too, that it's not an upward only trajectory. We don't expect that from life. We know that it's up and down, and upside down is kind of fun too. But the same is true for our creative lives.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's why when you talk about resilience versus grit and kind of like making those moves, even when that like fear of failure is very alive and there, I feel like that's so important. What's kind of your thought process of that, of like, do we need more grit, resilience? Why kind of lean into one versus the other? What's the difference?
Yeah. So grit has become super popular in recent times. Angela Duckworth, she literally wrote the book on it. And her definition of grit is persistent action towards a consistent goal, something along those lines. And the flip side of this is, well, what about when you want to change your goals? What about when you are not Kobe Bryant, who's just like, I work harder than anybody else in the room. I have this one singular mission in my mind, and I've had that since day one. What if you have many different interests? What if you have many different lives that you want to live within your own life? And that's where resilience comes in. Because to me, resilience is persistent action toward whatever feels aligned in that time, in that season. And I mean, this also is about times and seasons of our lives too. If you're a parent, you know that that requires a lot of agility for you to create a business, create a life in conjunction with people whose needs are constantly changing. Anyone in a relationship of any kind knows that it's ebb and flow. It's not. And so I'm so done with this idea of we need to take the same action, the same type of action every single day, or we need to take the same amount of action every day. This, to me, that's hustle. To me, that's this toxic masculine energy. And we're not talking about men versus women. We're just talking about, you know, that type of energy that says go and push and do and achieve, versus this flip side that says I flow. And that doesn't mean that I don't take action. That means that I take an action that feels aligned, and then I check in and see, does this continue to feel aligned? Van Gogh is a great example of this. Like, he was pretty much a failure at most everything he tried. And he tried a bunch of different stuff, but he just kept trying. And we know what happened when he found the thing that he was aligned with. I mean, paintings to the tune of $100 million plus selling for that. And when he was really bad at, the distinction that I love about Van Gogh is that he was really bad at drawing and at, you know, figure sketching. And things about art that people would say, you don't have a future as an artist if you're bad at this thing. But there's always a third door. There's always another door through which you can enter. I think a lot of people with grit, for example, just say, okay, here's my path. I have to do these 17 things before I can do the thing I really want to do. So I'm going to go to school, or I'm going to take this workshop, or I need to do this course, or whatever it is. I'm going to do all these things, and then I'll be able to do the thing I really want to do. But the beautiful thing is that if you just focus, tell your brain to find the third door, that's your brain will give you an answer. And again, if you just keep trying stuff and it doesn't work, like eventually you will find the third door. One example of this is with the musical that I'm writing. I mean, I really have no business writing a musical. Like, I have a degree in music ed, but a musical is so many art forms in one. I don't have the skills to do it full out. But I just decided one day, what if I just said, I want to do it. And so that qualifies me. One of my favorite scriptures, if you have desires, you're called to the work. So I just was like, I got a desire. I'm going to be called to this work. And so I just started doing voice memos on my phone at the park with my kids. Melody ideas, story ideas, just all 100% in the notes app in my phone. I completed a song this way, just me singing a cappella. Decided to sing it at one of my photography retreats, like kind of randomly. And like, it's hilarious when I but so I just was like, I'm gonna sing this. And so I did. And one of the girls there, turns out she has a connection to a Broadway producer. And she was like, I'm gonna introduce you. So that's how I get to pitch my musical to a Broadway producer. Like, that's if that's not an example of a third door, I don't know what is. But the thing that I want people to take away is this happens all the time. This is the way the world works. This is not because I'm special or whatever. It's because I decided to keep continually showing up. I showed up enough to write the song. I showed up enough to sing the song. I showed up enough to continually email the producer until I got a meeting with him, you know? So it's all of these things that are the ticket to resilience versus grit that says it has to be this one path. It has to be this one way.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I see so many people get this idea in their head of, I need to be on Broadway, or I need this accomplishment to happen, and decide that it's by doing all these things. And even if you do get to that end goal, there's almost like this moment of like, let down, right? I know I've experienced that myself too, where I like really pushed to a goal, and the goal was not everything that I hoped it would be, because I got there maybe in like not an aligned way, or I wasn't enjoying the process as I went. And I think you're totally right that we have no idea the little opportunities that'll pop up along the path that we start taking, that as we take this one action, this one thing will meet us there. But it's so much trust and openness and willingness to like be seen, which I think is really scary for most of us.
One of my favorite books is Simon Sinek, The Infinite Game, because he talks about this, about how we're obsessed with this idea of winning, but really it has to be about playing the game. You have to love the daily activities that are associated with getting wherever you're trying to go. Because if you don't love that voice memo at the park, like noodling through these ideas, combing through the stuff that sucks to try to find the little golden nuggets that are there, you're not going to like, you know, doing it on Broadway 8 nights a week. You know, you have to love the process, or else you're done before you start. So when you're thinking about, you know, passions or interests that you have that are different from maybe what you're currently in, I would invite you to think of in those terms. Do I like the daily activities that are going to be associated with this particular niche, this particular creative medium?
Yeah, I think that's such a good thought process of like, I loved music. I loved singing. Did I love being in the practice room in the basement every single day, like at my college? Like, no. Or, you know, when I started student teaching, did I like being in a school building with no windows? Like, no, I didn't. And so, you know, why did I feel so tied to that goal when I wasn't really kind of loving the process?
Yeah, 100%. And there are so many aspects to that that you cannot know before you get there. I mean, I had a similar experience with student teaching where I saw my teacher that I was working with. She was there from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. every single day, and she had no life. She was class the cat lady. And she was amazing at her job. And then I saw, you know, all the red tape that she had to deal with and all the autonomy that she did not have within the school system, the way that it was. And I was like, oh no, this is not going to work for me. And yeah. So did I still love music education in the sense of like being obsessed with bringing music, especially to people who don't think that they're musical, who don't think that they can participate in music beyond listening? Yeah, I'm still obsessed with that. And, you know, it's fun to see kind of how that's showing up in my life and my creativity now. Like, again, no effort is wasted. Every risk is rewarded. All of the pieces of your journey are so integral to the next step, to the next piece of your journey. I think people so often think, oh, I don't have enough experience. I'm not experienced in this new thing that I want to try. Maybe I'm interested in it, but that doesn't qualify me. I'm not qualified. And the best news is that everything you've done in your whole life has qualified you for this next step.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I know. I mean, when I started that program, that music program, and thinking like, this is what it has to result in. And it didn't, it could easily be, you know, and I know you probably feel similar with yours of like, I wasted those 4 years, but no, like that led into another opportunity, which when that ended led into the starting of my business. And yeah, I think just those small steps all add up and they all lead to the next thing, even if we don't know what that next thing is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think if you do know what the next thing is and you know for sure how the next 10 years are going to go or supposed to go, either you're playing too small or you're delusional, because that never works, right? It doesn't happen. And it's so funny to me that like we think, especially with how fast the world is changing, just even technology wise, and how technology, you know, affects every bit of our work life, especially. Like, it's hilarious to think that we can predict how we're going to feel, how we're going to be working, how we're going to be creating in the next 5 or 10 years. Like, one of my favorite examples is the founder of Airbnb. He was giving a speech at a graduation and he's like, yo, all the work that I'm doing now did not exist 10 years ago. It didn't even exist. And so yeah. It's so funny to me that we think that we can predict, or we think that that's somehow an effective way to protect ourselves from the vulnerability and the courage and the resilience that's going to be required to continually shape shift in a way that's going to continue to be aligned. Like, I don't think that alignment and choosing something that's aligned it has a shelf life. It's not going to last you forever. And that skill is really what I hope people develop, that meta skill of being able to discern and to develop self-trust to say, okay, I don't know everything, but I'm willing to fly into this unknown, knowing that I have my own back, knowing that I can handle any emotion that comes my way, knowing that I can handle the failure, the rejection, whatever it is that I'm afraid of on the other side of this.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you personally balance that alignment with maybe some of the more, you know, in our heads, like conceptually practical things of, you know, having to pay the bills and having to do things, you know, think through all these different options. I know for a while when I was single parenting, I was like, the priority is, you know, making sure I'm safe, which of course is not totally a real thing anyways. But is there any way that you think about balancing that or kind of like staying grounded as you're making those aligned choices and moving through life? Or are you much more on the trust side, kind of dancing from one thing to the next?
I think it's a beautiful blend of the two. And I think the best way to go about it is to blend the two. Like, for example, right now, I'm not making any money from several of my creative pursuits, and that's okay. I don't need it to make money right away. And I can still, you know, flow some energy into the things that have made money in the past. And I feel good about continuing to make money those ways. I think of everything on this project basis, where it's like, what am I going to do next? This project idea. Am I going to do a retreat? Am I going to do, you know, these like $7 voice memo pep talks that I send to people through Instagram DMs. Like, it's just, it's all the beautiful thing about this is that you can put an offer out and get immediate feedback. And so I think that most people just aren't putting enough offers out. Number one, like I'm tripping all over myself because this gets me so confused as to why people think they have a limited amount of offers that they can make. Like, they are afraid of annoying people. They're afraid of bragging. They're like, what? No, it's so much in service to offer people something, to offer them a chance to be transformed through your artwork, through your coaching, through whatever it is that you're offering. Like, it's a gift. So let them know about the offer. Put the offer out. Like, for example, with these little voice memo pep talks that I was doing on Instagram, I started it out. I was like, these are going to be $7. And I put them out for $7 and I got so many that I was like, oh, okay, this price needs to go way up. So then I increased it to like, I don't know, $29 or something like that. And then the demand went down a little bit, which was great. But it's just like, it's so fun to play that video game. It's so fun. So I think that what I'm getting at here with making aligned choices, paying the bills, all of that, is that they don't have to be in conflict with each other. If you don't know how to make money with a certain creative passion that you have, that's okay. You can start by like moving on an idea that you do have an idea to make money with it and play that game. Especially, this is the blessing of being a multi-passionate creator, is that maybe you're not as married to making money one specific way, or making your living through one avenue, one creation, one, like, it takes the pressure off. And that's a really great thing to lean into.
That's why I'm such a big fan of multiple streams of revenue too, because pressure is my least favorite thing ever. You know, like, if I immediately jumped out the gate being like, this podcast needs to pay my bills, like, oh my gosh, I would destroy it, you know? Like, yeah. So yeah, being able to like build up one and then like test the next has really served my business well too. But when you're trying to consider if something's like a shiny object, like, ooh, let's do this other thing, or let's not, like, how do you think through that? Because I know for me, I'm like, oh, this thing over here or this thing over here. And sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's distracting me from the thing that I know I'm supposed to be doing, or like I want to be choosing. How do you kind of weigh all those options or figure out what's what there?
Yeah, I like to imagine everything going beautifully, everything going the best it possibly can. Just imagining the best case scenario in all of the things that I'm considering. And then that really helps me get clear. Like, okay, if this really was possible, if I really could have this thing, I would do this for sure. So there it is. There's my answer.
I love that. Do you have an example of something that you kind of like made a recent decision on? Because I know you have the magazine right now, you have the podcast, some coaching and retreats. Like, what's one that you kind of had to weigh that before you jumped into it?
So, sorry. There was a time where the podcast was not feeling good to me, and I wanted to quit, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to quit because it was hard and because I wanted the relief of quitting, or because quitting was aligned. And I decided, okay, I need to really imagine this going as well as it possibly can. I have millions of downloads. I've got sponsors up the yin. I got all the things I want. Do I like it? Do I want to do it? Do I want to show up for this podcast? And the answer was no at that time. And so I stopped the podcast. I did not stop it immediately. I gave myself a little runway exit where I still had maybe, I think, 5 or 6 more episodes after I decided to quit. And I just set it down for a while. And I think I set it down for like 8 months. And then after that period of time, I wanted to do it again. And the best thing that I did for that was that I just didn't overthink it. I was like, I want to do this again. Great. I'm going to do it again. And I think we need to attach a lot less meaning to quitting, starting, picking things up, putting them down. Nobody has that much of a pulse on you that they care that much about what you're picking up, what you're putting down, what you're starting and stopping, quitting, et cetera. Like, and it doesn't really matter if other people think that I'm flaky or my podcast didn't get as much traction as it otherwise could have if I had just gone straight through. I don't think those, if I had gone straight through, I don't think those episodes would have meant anything to me or to other people, because it wouldn't have been aligned at that point. And so, yeah, that's the example that comes to mind.
I love that example. Yeah, I feel that way too. For a long time with my podcast, I was like, worst case scenario, if I just get to meet more people and nothing happens, like that's worth the risk for me, is just like, I'm going to see it as a great chance to meet people and have interesting conversations and like take the pressure off of things. But I think that idea of like, should I quit this? Should I keep going? Should I, you know, we get like all stuck in those shoulds. I know I have a lot. So I appreciate you sharing that example. I want to tell you about the program that has saved me so much time over the years as an entrepreneur, and that is 17 Hats. 17 Hats is made specifically for solo creative business owners just like you and me, and it lets me automate a lot of my contracts, my invoices, my emails, my workflows, so I just get so much time back during the day. I don't know how I ran a business for so long without it. If freedom and delivering an excellent client experience is important to you, I highly recommend jumping in and checking out 17 Hats. You can sign up for free at 17hats.com, but also if you use our code DANGEROUS, you get 50% off your first year when you sign up for a plan. So check it out at 17hats.com and get back to doing the things that you love in your business. What are some things that are really inspiring you right now? Because I know even just looking through your Instagram, I'm like, ah, she's playing with makeup. I wore a gold sparkly eyeshadow for Brooke today because I know she loves playing with style and music and all these different things. Like, what's one thing? Where's your heart right now? Where's your energy going right now?
This question I love because it's legit different every day or different times of the day. And that is how I could call it scatterbrained if I wanted to cast it in a negative light, but that I cast it in a positive light for myself by calling it voracious.
I love it.
Yeah. So literally today I am super jazzed on photography. I'm getting ready for my retreat that's coming up, and I just moved into a new home, which is super exciting. And I have a studio in my home. So I'm getting excited to play in the studio with some different and new ideas. I absolutely love Jesse Chamberlain Marble and Jimmy Marble. Jesse actually tragically passed away from cancer. They did a lot of work together. For anyone listening who doesn't know their work, it's very editorial and it's more lo-fi and very different from what I do now, but I am excited to kind of play in that style of things. But yeah, if you ask me tomorrow, I'm probably going to be all about my house and like my just interior design. I'm really obsessed with styling this fun new house that I got to custom build. And I love to just spend even 5 or 10 minutes imagining and creating my look and my presentation, my style for the day. So all those things are inspiring me. I don't know if that was helpful or not, because I'm just like, everything.
That's amazing. Yeah, I saw, do you have a pink laundry room? What's something about your house you're really excited about?
Yes, I have a hot pink laundry room, and the walls are the painted this glossy pink. And the floor is pink. I mean, everything is pink. The countertops are not pink. And like the appliances are not pink. But it's such a glam moment. And it makes me happy every time I walk by and I find myself just wandering in there just to soak in soak in the vibes.
This is not something I planned on talking about, but do you consider any of your creative work like inner child work? Do you like tap back into that kind of younger version of yourself when you're trying to find alignment or find creativity or inspiration?
Ooh, that's fascinating. I haven't really explored that specifically, inner child work, but I do feel like business is my spiritual practice in terms of healing all my childhood stuff. I mean, I didn't know any women who were making money. None. I knew no women who were making money growing up. And I knew women who worked because they had to, and that was it. And so I feel like a lot of the work that I do in business and in making money and being unapologetic about making money is really, really that healing work to create a different legacy for my girls as they grow up and watch me doing that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think, yeah, the like running a business is one of the biggest invitations into personal work and healing work that I've ever encountered. And what a beautiful thing to rewrite as you're exploring all the different potential that you have inside yourself and in your business.
Yeah, I always say emotional management is business management. Emotional management is creative management. Because truly anything that you're not doing or any result that you want that you don't have, it's likely because of an emotion that you don't want to feel. And if you can walk through shame and humiliation and embarrassment and failure and rejection and all that, like that's such a meta skill that bleeds into your whole entire life and it serves you so well.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, what are some of those limiting beliefs that you do see come up for creators or maybe have experienced yourself? Some of those things that just like keep us from living that wildly creative life.
I think the biggest thing is time. That's the one that always comes up first. I don't have time. I have kids. I have a job. I have all these other obligations, this and that. And I really think that you don't have a time problem. You most likely have a courage problem because the amount of time that it actually takes to create something when you're in an aligned space, when you're in an aligned energy, I mean, you know, when you're in that aligned energy, you get so much done so quickly and you, the energy just moves, it shifts, it, you come alive and then it just makes sense. Everything makes sense. The offer that you put out makes sense. The webinar goes well. The, you know, the photo is fabulous because of you and your own alignment and energy. So I would say, I would recommend that people do not try to boss themselves into spending more time on their creative pursuits or their business or whatever it is, but spend more time getting into alignment and flowing with the phases of being aligned that you have and work co-creating with that rather than just pushing through to, so like, for example, menstrual cycle, I sync all my work with my menstrual cycle. I do not demand a lot of myself in the winter season when I'm on my bleed. I demand a lot more of myself during ovulation. And so those types of syncing with nature and your particular ebbs and flows of alignment and energy, that's going to get you so much further than just slogging through same, you know, same amount of effort, same amount of day after day, same old, same old.
Yeah. Yeah. I've found that going on like a little walk in the morning sometimes will like spark my creativity too. Like I know you do writing as well. And that's one of the creative things I've been leaning more into lately is writing. And I feel like in a past version of myself, I would sit down and I'd be like, sit here and write. And like, why can't you come up with anything good? And, you know, I have writer's block all the time. And then just recently I've realized that if I go on a walk, sometimes an idea will just channel and it's just there and I don't even have to push. I don't have to think about it. It like, that's something that kind of kicks my alignment into motion. And sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. And I can kind of like thank it when it comes and thank it when it's not there. I don't know. Do you have any practices like that, that tend to help kickstart your flow of energy or like help you kind of find that alignment if you're in a place of just like, I don't know. Nothing feels good.
Yes, absolutely. Walking is my favorite one because you could just start going for a walk. You don't have to feel like it. You just go and then the magic happens as you go. They've done so many studies about walking and Steve Jobs famously held walking meetings. And they actually did a really cool study about you know, testing people's creativity and ask them to think of different uses for household items. Can you, how many different uses can you think of for this item? And the test group thought of ideas while they were walking. The control group thought of ideas while they were sitting. Of course, the people who were walking came up with way more ideas. So take your phone with you and voice record your ideas, just little snippets of them as you were walking. That's an amazing one. I also love anything that it's anything that gets you into your body, out of your head and into your body. So a dance break is always a good idea. And then if you really need a hack, literally going upside down, the blood rushes to your brain actually yeah. gives you more of a boost. Of course, like these are kind of arrows in your quiver to use at your discretion and not like all the time, but those are ones that help. Another one that I use commonly is just calling a friend, calling a person. I do so much work solo that talking something through, even if it's like someone who has no idea what I really do, that outward processing is so helpful.
I love that. And then this is just one quick question before we wrap up, because I've had several people in our audience being a little bit afraid of stepping into a new season of their life, whether that's motherhood or marriage or kind of that next phase in their core life, and just feeling like, what if my business just totally disappears because now I have this new thing, or I'm in this new season, or I don't know. And I experienced that a lot of fear and a lot of scarcity when I became a mom. Have you found that parenting, I don't know, what are your thoughts on hearing that? What would you say to someone that's scared of that next season?
Yeah. But first of all, I just want to like kind of hold space for that, because it's a very real fear. And I think that the stories we tell ourselves going into that really affect how we come out of it. A lot of people told me when I was pregnant with my first baby, oh, you won't want to work. You won't want to do this after you have a baby. And so then that set me up for kind of guilt, as I did want to still work. And I really had all those same desires. I hesitate to be really prescriptive about this, because it's such a personal journey and personal experience that you have to wade through. It comes with its own roller coaster and twists and turns. It doesn't follow a straight line or straight path. And my work-life balance has looked so different. I've started my business when I was pregnant with my first baby, and I have 4 kiddos now. I've got a special needs kiddo, and my kids are ages 9 down to 2 at this point. And there was a time where I was working probably 30 hours a week. That was like the most that I was ever working. And that was actually pretty soon after my daughter was born, and then scaled back after that. So I think that the practical thing that I would offer, 2 practical things. One is that we just need to get better at change, better at transitions, because I discovered that was the biggest thing that I needed to be good at if I wanted to keep my sanity amidst motherhood and running a business, was that the only constant was change. And the beautiful thing about running your own business is that you can change anything at any time. And the horrible thing is that you can change anything at any time. Yeah. And so sometimes you're questioning that too much and examining that too much. But overall, I just realized, okay, if somebody, you know, needs something from me, then I have to be able to build enough flexibility into what I'm doing that I can do that. I wanted to do that at that point. Now I'm actually in a different season personally, where I don't want to be that default parent anymore. Oh my gosh, this feels really vulnerable to share. I never shared this before. my husband and I are planning to switch roles. And so I will be more of the full-time, not technically full-time, but more of the full-time working parent. And he will be more of the part-time, more stay-at-home parent. And so, yeah, that is, all these transitions are very sensitive, but I think the beautiful thing that I would offer is that you have a lot more control and ability than you think you do. And that even if you feel completely differently after this big transition comes into your life, you're going to figure it out. And it doesn't have to be perfect. And it, in fact, it will not be. And that's the beautiful thing too. I always think about my kids watching me as a business owner and as a mother. And I don't particularly want them to see me as perfect. And part of that is because I actually had a mom who I saw as perfect. Like, she was superwoman in every sense of the word. And that actually set me up for like a lot of hard stuff growing up, like as an adult. And so the funny thing is, like, all that perfectionism, I could just be like, okay, I don't have to carry that anymore because I see that someone who I did view as perfect, it actually wasn't that helpful to me as an imperfect person. So this is a very long-winded answer to say your kids, your partner, your people who are witnessing you navigate a tough and new and unknown transition, them witnessing you do it with grace, do it with imperfection, do it with resilience, that's going to benefit everybody involved so much more than you somehow perfectly planning, perfectly, you know, predicting exactly what will be, because you just can't know. Okay, that's the rant.
I love that. And that's beautiful. And I think just reminds us of how many choices we have available to us. Like, we can decide to try it this one way and it might not work for us. And then we try it a different way. And I do love that about both parenting and the creative journey is there's just a lot more choices and options open to us than sometimes we even conceive of. So thank you for being willing to share some of those different choices at different times for you. I know that that helps a lot of people to see what's possible. So thanks for opening up about that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Well, if people want to connect with you and the work that you're doing, could you tell us a little bit more about your magazine, podcast, ways people can find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This has just been a delight. So if you're interested in being in my world, I would love to have you. I have a podcast called Wildly Creative Life. You can search it wherever you get your podcasts. I recently started a magazine called Heartful Magazine for family photographers. We're at Heartful Magazine on Instagram, and you can sign up to get the free magazine there. I'm on Instagram at Brooke B. Schultz. And if you would like some freebies, you can go to brookebschultz.com/get-creating, and that will take you to my 6 hacks for skyrocketing creativity, even if you're super busy.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It's been super fun, and can't wait for y'all to connect with Brooke outside of this episode too. Thanks for listening. This episode was produced and edited by the lovely Jen Madigan Creative. Music for this episode was written and recorded by Jamie Lono and Shammy D. Thanks for being part of our Dangerous Creatives podcast community, and we'll see you again next time.